karma's gonna get you. Gonna knock you right on the head.
You better get yourself together. Pretty soon you're gonna be dead.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the AOGP podcast. We took a couple weeks off, been very busy here, and we're going to get rolling again. This podcast is one about what people get wrong about Scientology. And my sidekick and usual guest, Eddie Cairo, is here with us. How are you, Eddie?
Hello. I'm quite good. How about yourself?
I'm doing quite well this Friday evening. So we're going to get rolling here. First thing I wanted to talk about, what people get wrong about Scientology, or independent Scientology, I should say, is the factor of monetization and the monetization throughout history of religion and taking advantage of things in religion vis-a-vis the almighty, dollar, ruble, shekel.
Yeah, and whatever. The mark, the
right,
euro.
Mark,
the
euro, gold doubloons, that yeah. sort of a thing. So as a prime example to go way back, we were talking right before we started the podcast about the money changers in the New Testament. But as a prime example of what we're talking about.
Really, he doesn't get mad a lot. That's not really Jesus's character in the New Testament, but he gets like the maddest he gets in the whole Bible there. He just starts flipping tables over and he calls them out and he basically tells them that this is not the way things are supposed to be and that this is fake. For lack of a better term, this is not real religion, and this is not what it's supposed to be. This is a corruption,
right? So the temple is not supposed to be the flea market on the Sabbath. In other words,
no, it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a relief, like a reprieve from all of that.
The day to day living, yeah,
especially in that time. If we're regarding Jesus as an actual historical character, he was a Jewish rabbi. If he was a real person, then that's certainly what he was. And on the Sabbath in Judaism, you're not supposed to do much of anything, depending on how orthodox you are. You're not supposed to do pretty much anything than either religious stuff or nap or contemplate and. Some people are allowed to read, but like I think the ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jews really don't even do that. Mm-hmm. So this is a major sin, a major violation, and I think I recall this being a situation of someone was benefiting from all of these sellers in the temple, and so he was not down with that.
Right.
That was his primary gripe. It wasn't just that people were doing it. It was that people were allowing that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this took place, what, around the 25, 30 AD?
You know, yeah, like about 25 or 30 AD, that's right. supposedly Jesus died when he was 30 or 32, sometime around that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
So, this far back, we had people trying to monetize the religious house since there were people there, and it was an opportunity to swoop in and make a few shekels, in other words.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And just like the thing is, this wasn't something that was new in any way, and it wasn't like he was shocked or anything. I think the way I interpret it is that this was a long-standing thing that had been happening for a while.
That's right, because people gather there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he was over it. You know, like, imagine you come to a church parking lot and they're selling things like it's Comic-Con just all over, just the most random stuff you can think of, and like sexual comics, and there's even some prostitutes hanging around. You might get a little pissed and tell them to bounce.
Yeah,
I can imagine that. I mean, it's not new, but you'd definitely be like, not here.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a problem, actually, in religion, dating back all the way to ancient times. People would position themselves among the gods, like if you ever hear the term imperial cult, that mm-hmm. is part of the definition. It's not like in the pejorative sense, but I still do not think it's good, because this is when kings and queens and royalty just set themselves up there, either as the divine or among the divines, or as the only people who can talk to the divines. So
mm-hmm.
that de facto puts them in the ultimate seat of power.
Right. So that brings us to the next topic, into what people get wrong about independent and or Scientology, the subject Scientology,
mm-hmm.
is authority.
Yeah.
So those in power, I mean, clearly those in power in anything, whether it's religion, politics, science, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
It's all an arbitrary, depending on what it is that they're saying as far as what their position of power is. And this also holds true for people in the negative connotation, who are throwing stones, if you will,
mm-hmm.
at those in power or a subject that is
right
worthwhile.
Well, Every motive you have to look at closely, and I don't care what side of the political spectrum or what it is in science, religious, irreligious, and no matter how pure intentions are, money, as soon as it enters into the sphere, which is everywhere in this society, except for like a couple of countries, mm-hmm. it is going to corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Money is power, and power corrupts.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is. And that is not to say that it is disproportionate to any, like, group or country, really. But the wealth gap is huge in the world. And generally, back in the old days, when they were just tribes and stuff, and they wanted to have more, like, meat and fruit and women than the other men in the village.
Things were simpler.
Yeah. Well, it was a similar type of thing, really. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to hold and hoard all the wealth, just like the kings and whoever. And what they would do is, usually those people would either claim to be gods, like I said, or to talk to gods.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this continues to this day in various forms all over.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what it is, there always seems to be some person who, I don't know, who has intentions that are at first semi-admirable, but somewhere along the way, it just becomes a money-making endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just part of living under capitalism, I think. I mean, I know we were going to talk about this at some point, but an argument can be made that in a society and in a system with such a large wealth gap, it is somewhat justifiable to do whatever you need to do to feed your family. Mm-hmm. And some people have that viewpoint.
Right. And disregard integrity.
Right.
Or the truth.
Yeah.
For that matter.
And you'll often hear people say things like, oh, do you really want to fall on the sword of principle about this? You know, and is this your hill to die on? That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, shut up, conform, and make mm-hmm. that money. Yeah.
Right. Right. Bank it and just be quiet.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Well, that is the, that brings us to the doorstep of our episode tonight. The issue of what people get wrong about Scientology, because bad news sells.
Yeah, it does.
And you can monetize bad news way better than you can good news. And bad news can be incorrect news, or it could just be bad news.
Right. Well, people love to just hear about bad news rather than good news. You're right.
Part Everybody of the, loves the train wreck.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you could call it rubbernecking mm-hmm. if you want. I mean, like, just how many times have you been on the road, especially on the freeway, and you've seen a wreck and people are slowing down, even though the wreck hasn't just happened? It was soon enough. They're basically looking like, ooh, do I see any blood? Mm-hmm. It's this very morbid thing, this innate thing in humans. And I think it does serve a survival purpose. Part of the reason I believe we are so fascinated by the morbid is to stay cautious. So,
is there danger here?
Yeah, and so we can recognize these patterns so they don't happen to us. That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it is unpleasant, but people like being scared and freaked out. People like watching horror movies, I think, for that reason. Mm-hmm. Even though it makes you feel unsafe in your own home, like, people still do it. Those movies sell out.
Right.
And you can, here's an example, if you don't believe me, you know, it does sell. Tragedy sells way more than comedy does. Just go on to the local news right now and see how many fluff pieces there are versus how many horrible, just mm-hmm. awful or anxiety-provoking stories.
And yeah.
The fluff pieces are always going to be little snippets, and the horrible stories are always going to be the most in-depth.
Yeah, the long epics.
Yep, that's true.
Well, clearly we have an epic with the subject and the Church of Scientology, both.
Yeah, we do.
It seems to me, especially the last few years, the tabloids poster child of favorite train wreck.
Right.
Amongst celebrities and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's got everything that this sort of just, I don't want to call it a reactive tendency, because I don't think it's necessarily reactive to be interested in things that are considered darker, as long as it is a healthy interest. But when you get to this sort of thing where you only want to consume the negative all the time, all the time, all the time, and that's why, because it is negative, mm-hmm. it's kind of something else. It's got celebrity, and it's got this I heard this game of telephone thing.
Right. Definitely.
It's got novelty, as in being new, and it's got just some of the most horrific stories you've ever heard. But interestingly enough, a lot of the pop cultural interest around Scientology right now has shifted from, oh, that's that thing celebrities are involved in and I don't really know much else about it. It shifted from that to, I heard that they do really bad things, and just a bunch of stuff about Miscavige that, you know, is in all likelihood true, but that's kind of where it stops. Mm-hmm. People don't really know how bad it gets, but it's fun to imagine.
That's what it seems right. Like. Might as well just dub that in.
Yeah, there's a lot of dubbing. Mm-hmm. A lot. Mm-hmm. Right. People, you know, theorizing that, you know, oh, maybe they have inns and every business in LA and every small town government and yada, you know. Like, mm-hmm. All right, let's not get carried away.
Right. Right. Well, they place there whatever they want to put there to fill in the void of the things that they don't know, which is, to me, seems to be the crux of the matter, is if you don't know about it, well, you might as well just fill in the void with sort of like
whatever
Mad Libs, you know.
Yeah.
Put silly concept here and say it's an origin story or it's a lie detector or whatever.
Right. And I know part of that is also those are familiar terms that are similar enough to convey an almost truth, but it's not accurate either. And so with all of these half-truths out there, you get this very classic sort of story of just deception and tragedy and cover up and wealth and all this stuff. And it does seem more than there is concern that there is just this urge to watch a plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it seems to be. Because people often express or at least feign concern for people involved in the church currently or for any Scientologists, but then when they actually get a chance to interact with one, all of that goes out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very odd to me. I think that is sort of the front that has to be put up in order to make it okay.
Yeah. So when you say front, what do you mean?
Well, I mean this sort of I, for lack of a better term, I could call it a shore story of, oh, you know, I am so concerned and I'm just, I've got such empathy and sympathy for these poor people. And I'm just, oh my God, I'm beside myself. And that's not actually true. As you can see, whenever there's a chance to be sadistic about it. Like
they are,
yeah. Like wanting to release names of active Scientologists and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a very odd thing. I think that it's concern trolling a little bit. Mm-hmm. That it's pretending to be concerned.
A little bit of a covert hostility.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Just pretending to actually have some concern there because that makes it seem more legitimate to just jump on this like hype train of I don't know what of tabloid gossip and whatever else you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. So at what point does it become monetization?
Why?
in tabloids with the subject of Scientology and its members in the church?
Well, I mean, everyone in this story is a little bit guilty of monetization because we have no choice living in this system, like I said.
Right.
But you know, some people are worse about it than others. And the church and their critics are pretty much at par with their, I guess, commodification.
Mm-hmm.
Of their own
parishioners.
Yeah. It's like I know that the church a long time ago found a way to make that their image and like work with it and you know, cool, fine if you know how to do that, more power to you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gone the other way as well. People have figured out a way to make the horror stories just like legitimately awful, terrible, sadistic things that have happened, like fun to hear. And it's just, I don't like that at all.
No, it's always seemed really slimy to me.
Yeah, it's not cool. I mean, I know that screens have a tendency to dehumanize people anyway, so these are just abstract stories and all that. But it seems like on both fronts here, there's a detachment because money is the king.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's like a Scientology girl was saying the other day in her video that why would somebody stay in for so long if there was nothing good to be had with the subject itself and what its intrinsic value is.
Right.
They're sort of mutually exclusive ideas.
Right. And look, I'm all for the idea that isolation and and just being sort of emulsively alienated in any sort of thing will warp your opinion and your way of thinking, and then sure. later on you'll think differently about it. Sure, mm-hmm. that is going to happen, but
yeah, I get that too.
Yeah, but she is correct, and so are you. That something was keeping them there,
right?
And yeah, a lot of the time that might have been coercive, but most of the time it's not. And maybe that's sunk cost or whatever, but that sunk cost means they're hanging on to something.
Mm. So that brings us to the crux of the matter is it's almost as if it was some sort of an equation where you have, you've been in the Sea Org and you're trying to figure out how can I make up for all of the lost income for the last 20 years? I know.
Right.
I'll write a book.
Yeah.
But I've got to make it interesting in order to get a publisher.
Right. And that's the old adage, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. Yeah. And I think LRH knew that because in policy, no problem talking to professors of religion, even if they have kind of like a slightly antagonistic angle, no problem there. Because they have some integrity. They are interested in writing from a somewhat neutral standpoint. They are interested in gathering information and data. But journalists are usually mostly concerned with whether or not the story will sell. And a good journalist will be able to tell the truth and as much as they can, and also tell the story and sell it just with their writing.
Right, but, with reliable sources, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you're working for the Washington Post or New York Times, and you know, I know people have their issues with those, but you know, there right. are some really good journalists out there, the New Yorker, Vanity Fair, you know, that sort yeah. of thing. And Scientology has been in all of those.
Yeah, and it's definitely a person by person thing too. And of course, there's always going to be some ignorance and that sort of thing. But I guess the issue is. When you don't have all of the information, you will fill in the blanks, or you will find somebody who was willing to. I mean, we saw that with the Time magazine thing. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, they back got in 91.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. people got sued for libel.
Mm-hmm.
Like the people behind Time, I think they got away from it cleanly enough, or with minimum financial losses. But you know, the person who actually lied. Did not. And right. that has to be a fairly common thing. The problem is you have to actually be able to prove that it was liable.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah, it's difficult to prove. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, in this subject for what we're doing in the podcast, it's a little bit different because the subject itself doesn't have anybody to defend it.
No, very few people. I mean, within like academic circles, sure, there's Cessner and the UK and in Europe and in some universities in the United States, but those aren't really far reaching mm-hmm. outside of those circles.
Right.
And it really depends on which university you go to as well. If you want to get involved in like religious studies, sometimes, or even a lot of the time, unfortunately, in the United States, especially, you will get a religious studies professor who means Christian studies mm-hmm. by that or whatever. His or her particular religion is, and will not go about it neutrally. And that's not good at all, but that's its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so bias is a big part of all of this.
Because right.
bias is easy to capitalize off of.
Mm-hmm.
It is really hard to defend Scientology and make a buck off of it at the same mm-hmm. time. It's just not the path of least resistance.
Right. So when you have there's a differentiation that needs to be made. And I've said this before in social media.
Mm-hmm.
We've had several conversations about it, that there is a tremendous difference in the subject of the Church of Scientology and the subject of Scientology. Yes. And independent Scientology. Mm-hmm. That yeah. all three of them are different and have their own meanings and should have a different definition if there was a dictionary that had those definitions in it.
Right. And folks get really, really confused about this really easily. It seems to be quite hard to the, I don't want to say uninitiated, but to people who really don't know a whole lot about it, to understand that Scientology is not with a capital S and then the trademark symbol after it. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about an organization, but that's what people hear when you say it. And so when I say Scientology, I mean a subject. I mean the religion or philosophy or science, however you want to look at it, of Scientology. I do not mean the Church of Scientology.
Right. And almost one for one, people make the mistake of misidentifying one for the other.
Right. And when you, well, at least when I try to tell people what independent Scientology is or what it is that I'm involved with, they won't really get it. I have to do it at least five different ways. I have to say it five different ways, five different times. That's usually what I say in order for people to get it. But sometimes that doesn't even work.
No. It just bounces off the surface.
Yeah. And they'll be like, but it's not Scientology. I'm like, okay, listen, first of all, you know, that's not an organization. That is like that's a religion. You understand that religions splinter off pretty often, and this has happened with this too. It happens all the time. You know, mm-hmm. But for some reason, it doesn't get through, and I'm not really sure why. Maybe there's something I have a blind spot on that I'm not addressing, and it's right in front of me, but mm-hmm. whatever it is, I find it very difficult because people have this insistence on saying, okay, so it's not Scientology, but... No, that's not accurate.
No. We're not using metaphors here or anything like that. It's not a 1-1 ratio. They're completely different. It's denominator over numerator or numerator over denominator type of thing. Mm. And that's the distinction we wanted to make with this podcast, is to clear up some of these fallacies that you see because of monetization, to make things interesting.
Yes, and I tell you, this is a pet peeve of mine. Whenever there's even a positive article about independent Scientologists, free zoners, or whatever, it always describes us. Not only that this is not even true for 100% of independent Scientologists, they usually describe indies as ex-Scientologists. I don't even know where to start with that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't call Reggie Jackson an ex-baseball player.
No, of course not.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Right. And man, imagine, you know, like, I don't know. If somebody had splintered off from, like, organized Christianity entirely, but was still practicing and preaching and reading the Bible and had crosses all over their house and, like, loving Jesus, would that really be appropriate to call them an ex-Christian? I don't think so.
Right, right. So there's a little bit more going on here than meets the eye, mm-hmm. beyond the monetization. There's a bit of a negative connotation through colorful negative adjectives to embellish it. And I think that is also part of the monetization of the whole thing, is you have to make it non and no and X and black. Black is associated with darkness.
Right. And
evil.
Yeah. I mean, people don't want to hear about the positives.
No.
It just is not a thing. And that's very unfortunate. And I get that's because it is, to say the least, a minority religion. It is not super big at all. But it does sort of put an impediment on the ability to practice in any manner whatsoever, being such a stigma that the word itself is a dirty word. Mm-hmm. And I've even met independent Scientologists who don't even like to call themselves that, mm-hmm. because of that stigma.
But do you think it's because it's sort of a trickle-down thing from major news outlets, or do you think that it's just systemic in general to the subject and always has been from day one? Or did this start back around 95 with Artie Lerma break-in of taking of all of his computers and everything. I mean, that was the first time, other than the Time magazine thing in 91, that
right.
Scientology got a lot of bad press.
Yeah.
Bad press.
Well, I think it's always been that way to a degree, and it is kind of unavoidable whenever something new starts up. There are going to be growing pains, and there's going to be problems, and because there are going to be just the nature of religious leaders, there's going to be clashes and a bit of, for lack of a better term, selfishness and just that sort of thing. Mm. And there's all these stigmas that come with it. I mean, at the time that Scientology was coming about, the chief thing that was popular that they would have faced as an opposition was the Christian countercult movement, mm-hmm. which is called that for a reason, not anti-cult, countercult, which I think is funny, but that was just a bunch of people who thought, well, anything that is not Christian is really, really bad, and we need to just snap that out. And they would usually associate it with devil worship because that's the easiest way to scare people.
Right, which we've seen and we talked about in the first podcast this season.
Yeah, we still see it. Mm-hmm. I see that online a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, Scientology's devil worship and stuff. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know,
right.
It's
right.
Super silly to me, but yeah. Someone could easily believe that if they don't know anything
about
it.
Well, sure. They'll just look at the headline and then pigeonhole it and go label and, oh, that crazy cult, you know, those devil worshipers, and they move on. And that is patently not the case, having done the entire Scientology gamut of processing and training. It just is not the case, folks. I can tell you firsthand.
Right. Well, I mean, anything that challenges one's view is not going to be as easily put into their mind as something that sort of confirms a bias or a prejudice or a hate they already have. It just latches onto a feeling and it stays there. And that's kind of like a mantra, you know, like a Scientology is evil. Scientology is evil. Scientology is evil. It's anti-Christian. It's anti-Christian. It's anti-Christian. It's a cult. It's a cult. It's a cult. That just gets repeated in enough times. That's just almost the reality.
Right.
Because it's a lie that's told.
The Third Reichism.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, and it's interesting to me. I was having a conversation today with a friend of mine in Minnesota, and we were talking about how YouTube is doing the largest sanitization and homogenization and eradicating everybody that's talking about the COVID virus and anybody that isn't following along with the narrative that, well, for lack of a better expression, Big Brother wants to be followed. But if you go look at BitChute, for example, and you try to pull up something, anything on Scientology, there's almost nothing.
Right. Well, despite any sort of conspiratorial analysis, unfortunately, I think the truth is a lot more boring than we'd like it to be.
It needs to be embellished. There needs to be a little bit more spice added to it in order to keep the ball rolling and keep people with attention fixed to it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I mean, a little bit, but probably not in the way that you're thinking. I'm saying the situation with YouTube is awful because it used to be a place where anything goes and it was independent content creators.
West.
Yeah, and nothing was overproduced and it was pretty much an equal playing field and everyone had their own little niche and it was super grassroots and it was super fun and it was lighthearted. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some bad corners, but you knew not to go to them. You know, just don't go to them. It was before autoplay was a feature and all that. And it was recommending things that were a little too specific, you know, just before it got creepy. And now it is a media giant. And their only concern is with money, with commercialization.
The monetization and commercialization for advertising dollars.
Yes, and people think that it's just one-sided, that it's a one-sided bias. It is not. Things get demonetized, if not deplatformed, for just basic, stupid things, for having a curse word, for saying the word sex, for saying death, for mentioning guns, for mentioning injury, for mentioning crime, for you name it, for mentioning being gay. This can get you demonetized. This is a problem with YouTube's policy that every single video has to be commercially viable, mm-hmm. as they put it, because you don't own your content. Mm-hmm. When you put it on YouTube, as much as you think you do, mm-hmm. maybe you make some royalties from it. That's just what it is. Mm-hmm. Royalties. It is their product, and they can take it off if their advertisers think that it could be at all damaging. So it is this sort of, it's turning into this squeaky clean sort of, almost like a cable channel surrogate. Mm-hmm. Because the weird as hell kids things stay up there. But more and more creativity is being taken off. And you cannot even criticize something like racism without it flagging YouTube system and saying, mm-hmm. They said the word racism, just fucking demonetize them. None of it makes any sense. They're just trying to eradicate any discussion on mm-hmm. either side. And it's just this, it's just supposed to be complete entertainment without any kind of philosophy at all.
So would you say that they're flattening the curve?
Maybe.
So if they're doing that and they're homogenizing it, I mean, there's no way to tell as a viewer what is being monetized and what is not being monetized. I don't have the subscriber version of YouTube, but every one that I watch has a commercial, which leads me to believe whether somebody's getting paid for it or not, they're still making money off of it.
Right. You don't have to get any of that ad money for an ad to be before your video. It could have like 75 views and it's just you playing guitar in the crappy pseudo thermal camera effect on your iMac, and that commercial that it has before it, they'll make money off of it, but you won't make a dime. Mm-hmm. You won't make any money. And that's all it is. YouTube is just concerned about finances and keeping their advertisers. Mm-hmm. And it's not what it used to be.
Well, I find that interesting when you juxtapose the subject of Scientology, which the differentiation between the subject of Scientology and the Church of Scientology and independent Scientology outside of our own videos is not made, and these commercials are on there, and they're not homogenizing or deleting any of these videos about Scientology. So that, to me, that begs the question, is it part of their agenda to just give the subject itself and the church a black eye, whereas things like you said, guns and sex and gay and, you know, all these things they do consider to be controversial. They don't consider Scientology, the subject or the church or independent Scientology, to be controversial, and they'd like to just put the last nail in the coffin. Is that what we're seeing?
I think they believe it to be inconsequential, honestly.
It just flies under the radar, in other words?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether or not those critical YouTube channels have been demonetized. They seem to have never been deplatformed, or maybe they're like one or two cases.
It makes you wonder why they haven't.
Right.
Because they're offensive to me.
Yeah, I don't like them either, but I have no way of knowing if they're demonetized. I don't really watch them. And I know that YouTubers often send out a notice, but a big way of telling is looking at the Patreon list. And the bigger the Patreon list, the more likely it is that the videos have been demonetized. Yeah.
Right. The sooner the egg's going to drop onto the floor.
Yeah.
Because they're using Patreon as a backup.
Yeah, and there is so much of that, and I appreciate those who tell their stories with honesty and in a genuine manner, but those people who use clickbait and are just like
the real truth behind independent Scientology.
Yeah, and are using like honestly the worst, most terrible stories I've heard happening to people in my own religion, but like in the church, yeah, it's super messed up. I hate that. Like, just getting people to click on and go, oh, that's awful. I got to hear about this. You know, oh, all right. Just everything about it seems bad. And people are like detached from it as if these aren't real people being really hurt by this sort of thing. And just that this speculation is anything but a money grab or a clout chase to be modern, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing is the falsehoods that are out there about the subject are far and wide, ranging from the E-meter is a lie detector to, like we mentioned earlier, that the OT3 level is the origin story of Scientology, and that it just goes on and on and on and on.
Everyone thinks their comment about that is original, right?
Right. When 99% of the people that I talk to on Reddit, a few people on Facebook, because most of the people in Facebook groups, in the groups that we're in, are old timers,
right?
You know, been around the block and stuff like that. But so many people, they don't have any education. They don't have any understanding on the subject at all. They don't know the absolute basics of it whatsoever.
Right. And there's this sort of like attempt at like a gotcha moment where I'm like, you know, like I don't even know about that and I know that's not correct. What do you think you're doing? And I don't know. That also seems sadistic to me. And like, have you actually done your research? You know that that's a bad position to put someone in. None of us are in the church, but if you thought so, I don't even think you know what you're doing. That sort of deal. So yeah. I don't know. It's like, it's trolling, I guess, if we're going to be watering it down and getting it down to its basics.
Right.
It's trolling.
So by that line of thinking, we'd have to say that Tony Ortega, Leah Remini, and even Mike Rinder are trolls.
Well,
is that where we're headed?
I don't know about Rinder's intentions specifically. He's a bit of an anomaly, and I think that he is trying to make up perhaps for his role in the whole Miscavige thing. Maybe misguidedly so, I don't know, but I would have to be really, really in denial to not say that he's not trying to monetize at all. Remini, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for, because you know, a celebrity Scientologist is going to be treated the best out of anyone in Scientology, except for Miscavige himself.
Right.
Right.
Within certain context and reason,
Yeah. Ortega, I don't know what his beef is, you know. Like, that is just his niche, I guess.
Well, he's got an awful lot of ads on his webpage.
Yeah, so that's his niche that he's found, and that's clout chasing or whatever you want to call it. That's what it is. And I mean that.
But where did the subsidies come from for these people to be trolling about false information about things? And you know, Mike and Leah have. They have no leg to stand on. They know about these things and they know what they are. And I mean, I've seen them say things that I know are just flat out lies that they know the truth on. And they're saying Paisley when it's white.
Right. And I think that part of that is once people get out, they kind of face this dilemma. You know, which camp am I in now? And there is an incentive to go after the money that was lost or was never gained. And some could argue that's trying to rebuild your life or whatever, but regardless of what it is negatively affecting real people.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're going to rebuild your life, it seems to me that if you're going to do something like that, that you want to rebuild your life in a positive sense at nobody else's expense, because you've just been to hell and back and the church has dragged your name through the mud and called you an apostate and a failed actress and so on and so forth and all that. And wouldn't you want to tell the truth?
Right. And I can't speak on everything because I don't know everything. But sometimes there are some things that should have been revealed that are, but other times it seems like speculation out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where the problem
Unbridled speculation.
Yeah, especially when there are things that don't add up. Like when on one hand in Remini's book, she's like, well, that rumor is not true about how Scientology has such a huge presence in Hollywood that you can't escape it when you're in the film and TV industry. But on the other hand, you know, when she wins an award, she's like, oh, Hollywood really is changing. And that was a big moment for me when I started seeing things like this and hearing these things that are blatantly opposed to each other. Like, well, which is it that really can't be both?
Yeah, it can't be left and right at the same time.
Right. And so, yeah, you got to wonder. And it's not like I don't have empathy for anyone who has left and is now just completely over it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's being gone about in a completely wrong and indelicate way,
mm-hmm.
to say the least. The people I don't have any sympathy for at all are people who have never had any involvement whatsoever, who make it their life's freaking work.
Right, or, yeah, that's all they do.
Yeah, or obsessed with tearing it down, mm-hmm. or whatever, just as like a hobby. Either way, even if you're doing it for fun or if you're doing it for money, it's just it's a bit cringeworthy because they had like the anonymous thing, for example, that Chenology thing.
Mm-hmm.
People seem to have forgotten that a lot of the, for lack of a better term, OGs of the Chenology quote unquote mission or movement or whatever were. They were independent Scientologists. A lot of the people who have been leaking the violence and the abusive things that have happened that the world knows about now were independent Scientologists. And the anonymous creed or whatever had always been originally, we don't care what people believe. The problem is not in the belief system. The problem is that people are getting hurt. And that's fine. Right. I can get down with that.
I can identify with that completely.
Totally. But that seems to have been lost along the way.
Kind of, a few years ago.
Yeah, people kind of bandwagoned. Mm-hmm. And now it's A equals A equals A. It's all the same thing to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I wanted to do this podcast is to kind of clear things up a little bit for people and get it across that the subject and the church and independent Scientology are they're three different things. Independent Scientology is much closer to the real subject than what Hubbard intended,
mm-hmm.
especially with us and our organization. We're not the only ones. There's some really good eggs out there, and people with very good intentions and getting very good products. But, It's people like Remini and Rinder that the misidentification is our biggest enemy.
Right. And I know they know better. And they know that the independent scene isn't really part of that at all. And they've had some independent Scientologists on their show.
Briefly, yeah.
Yeah, briefly. But it's never really been gone into or made clear for the person watching at home
what the differentiation is.
Yeah, what it is. And that does realistically spill over to the point where it is only attracting these like the most fringe type of people.
The denizens.
And, yeah. And you can't even really mention it to someone without.
Right. Yeah. Do I want to show this to my friend?
Yeah, without it getting like all over the place with misunderstandings, and you have to no about it, you know, just, oh my gosh. And it's just become, it's just become a spectacle, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't. Mm-hmm. I don't think it at all matters the belief system, even if you have gripes with it, because it can and certainly is used to justify a lot of badness both in and out of the church. However, none of that even comes close to the actual issues at hand of the crimes that the church are committing.
Right. Yeah, we have to differentiate that what they're doing is the difference between the subject of Scientology and the Church of Scientology, and what Miss Gavage and those who are culpable with him do are night and day. The subject of Scientology itself is really geared towards and has tens of thousands of pages geared towards people trying to help them and make their lives better and help them flourish and prosper.
Right.
It's not the subject. Hubbard says, you know, if you ever have a problem with the technology, it's not the technology, it's the personalities involved.
Right. I found that to be true from observation. And, like, you know, you don't have to believe things that aren't true for you. That's why the adage exists that it's only true if it's true for you. But I don't even know if that's the main problem here. It's really hard to put succinctly, but another issue that I have is this degradation, this sort of line that is sent out a lot that, okay, well, this was all just a hoax from the beginning,
right?
And it's completely shallow, and how could anybody fall for that?
Why I wrote tens of thousands of pages to because it's a hoax,
right? Uh-huh. That's what I'm saying. It is ridiculous now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I come from a semi-critical background, and now I'm looking at this going, No. Mm-hmm. Nobody writes this much right. and finesses it to this extent and does this trial and error constantly and basically kills themselves by overworking for fun or like, ha ha ha, you know, I'm
tricking all these
religion.
People. Yeah, no. I'm so evil. Yeah,
that just doesn't happen.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, you know, it's obvious that the guy cared in the amount of time that he took. It's an applied science. There is more written information by one individual who, you know, he was a great distiller of information, and not all of the information in Scientology is something that he originated, but he pulled it together and put it in one place
right.
and made a roadmap. And very yeah. few people can do what he did on any given subject, but even like physics, for example.
Right.
This is more involved than anything maybe up to, you know, quantum physics or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of specifics, and if you do what he says, you get results.
Yeah, it is pretty intricate. And if you've ever actually read some literature by people who, for my assessment, genuinely do seem to be trying to trick people with that sort of thing, they don't put that much effort into it.
No. Con artists are lazy. That's why they're con artists.
Yeah, at some point, he would have just run off with the money. He didn't do that.
Right.
Not
never
at any
to be
point.
Seen again.
Yeah, no, that didn't happen. He certainly had the money to do that.
Yeah.
If he had wanted
$400 million at his death.
He could have hidden anywhere in any country. It had never been heard from him.
Right. He decided to sneak back into the country in order to keep the wheels on the bus and get things going and everything in the late 70s.
Right, and went through intense auditing trying to deal with himself. That is not something you're doing if you're tricking people.
Right. I'm trying to better myself while I write things to better other people. Seems like he's on a pretty good, you know, bead and path there to do something like that when he's risking his own neck.
Right, and LRH was not perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
Nobody is.
No. But that is not the point. I don't care how mean or bad of a guy or sketchy of a past he had, it doesn't devalue the subject.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have anything to do with him. If you take it, you read it, you make sure you understand what it says and you apply it, it works.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with the guy's personality.
No.
You know, I mean, I could think of all kinds of parallels where that sort of thing is the case as well. You have people who, well, let's take an example. Bob Ross. Seems like a funny analogy.
Okay.
But you look at Bob Ross, did those shows for years, painting happy
little trees.
Happy little trees. And all of that stuff. And all the while smiling.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to do that. He could have gone out and done perfectly well for himself as an artist on his own.
Right.
Now, granted, you know, people say that particular style of art doesn't lend itself to, say, oh, I don't know, maybe a Thomas Kincaid.
Right.
But it's still art. It's still aesthetic. And he could have monetized that and walked away and never done that sort of thing.
Mm.
But his heart was in showing how other people to do something that would make them happy in their life.
Right, and that is what I was telling someone just the other day. I agree with you about Bob Ross, and it puts
a smile on your face when you say his name. I mean, you can't say his name without smiling. You know.
Yeah, he was super wholesome, and he contributed a lot to the world. But I don't care if someone was wholesome or not, or if they had a bunch of public relations debris surrounding them. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, you look at the products that they got. If you looked at the novels that Hubbard wrote from, let's say, the mid-40s up to Battlefield Earth or the Decology Mission series, there's a huge difference in the way that he writes. That's because of the technology that he developed that helped him become a better artist.
Yeah.
And then the way that it's written is just hot knife through butter.
Right. It's easy to read.
Yeah.
And it's pleasant.
Yeah.
And I this might be unpopular, I don't know, but I like the more, quote, pulpy science fiction than I do the sort of cold modern stuff.
Right. Yeah, you know, you're Old Doc Methuselah and things like that, and warts and all, and it was gritty, sort of like Star Wars when it first came out. It was gritty; it wasn't plasticized and Disneyfied.
Yeah, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fun, and that's the point. I think of reading fiction is to lose yourself in a cool, silly world, and this sort of just I don't know a better word other than metallic science fiction. These days, where it's the same thing told over
and
over
aluminum
again.
Science fiction.
Yeah, it's just it seems to be all the same thing rehashed these days. And I miss when it was sort of a brave new world, and that was the front line.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there is a lot of stigma around jumping from fiction to nonfiction, especially in like the esoteric spiritual realm. But there shouldn't be. Any writer, author, or person has the not only the ability, they should jump around and find what works for them and follow their passion and their interests and
very
their intentions.
So.
Yeah. And also, this is something that gets overlooked too, I think, a whole lot, was during the time that actually wasn't unusual, because science fiction was not considered just to be like fiction and detached from reality. It was regularly predicting things
that
were coming
true. What was
going to
happen in the future.
Yeah. And so everyone was getting a little hyped up in the science fiction writer community, and they were all trying stuff like that, trying to, if not predict, invent their own technologies.
Right, or influence,
influence happened a lot. I mean, gosh, this sounds really silly because I don't know what the alternative was, but the countdown NASA does, you know, 10, 9, 8, all that.
Yeah.
That comes from a science fiction work.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I guess they were just going to like launch it and hope everyone was ready.
Right. Okay, folks, we're going to push the button. Everybody hold their breath. Get ready to ooh and ah.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. This wasn't weird at the time. It was almost expected, and L. Ron Hubbard was one of the successful ones.
Right. And that brings up a good point. Something that really gets my hackles up, wherever my hackles are. I'm going to have to look it up and see where my hackles are. But,
okay.
You know, somebody says, you know, science fiction author L. Ron Hubbard. Or they'll say
they'll
even
say
worse,
failed
science fiction author. Then I failed. Just go, what? Failed? He's one of the most published authors in history.
We should have the Guinness Book of World Records lying around.
Yeah.
Show.
Yeah, we should have looked it up.
He still holds that record to this day.
Yeah.
He still holds that record.
Yeah. And that's the thing. When you look at what science fiction authors were doing, as we just discussed, and you look at the technology that he developed along with lots of others that worked alongside him, was codified and put into volume after volume after volume, whether it was administrative technology or it was the philosophic technical technology of auditing, which is spiritual counseling that we do. It really shows that he was looking at the past and the future through what he was doing in the now.
Right.
And that's something really only to me, a science fiction author, an Asimov, a Heinlein, a Clark. What's the guy's name that did what was the Tom Cruise movie?
Which one?
The one with the precogs and all of that.
I know what you're thinking of.
Philip K. Dick.
I forget the name.
I can't think of the name of the movie either. But Philip K. Dick especially was really good about predicting the future and putting things out there as to what was going on. I mean, you know, we're almost at precognitive awareness as it is now. Now, you know, and undeniably, thought crimes are becoming more and more popular.
Right.
But that's another podcast.
Well, it's like, I think something that also gets overlooked a lot is the fact that a lot of science fiction writers were into what I would call forbidden religious territory at the time, all that esoteric stuff we're talking about in the first episode.
Sure, 2001 really walked that line too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy common. And before science fiction was even popular, esoteric writers were talking about stuff that we would consider, quote, science fiction today.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a thing.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, the line between science, fiction, religion, philosophy.
It's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, it's in the eye of the beholder. All of these things, one man's science is another man's religion, you know, and the things that these guys were saying about technology might as well be magic to those who had never seen it before.
Yeah, dude, imagine bringing an iPhone back to even just 1940. People would have freaking killed you.
Yeah.
They would have called you a sorcerer.
It's a radio, man.
Yeah. Like, here, you can see yourself. It's a mirror. And look what we're going to do. We're going to record your voice. And look what else it can do. And, you know, everything it can do just with the base app without internet connection, they would have been, oh, hell no.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it just would have seemed like a witch tablet or something.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have been about it.
Mm-hmm.
And think about that now. It just, I don't know. It seems really, really unwise and dishonest to try to frame the time that L. Ron Hubbard was coming up in modern standards. And, you know, I really say, so what? What someone does as a writer to make money and then pursuing their passion, two separate things.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I shouldn't use the skill I have to make any money at all because I might want to do something else in the future. That sucks. You know, that's like cancel culture, but back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's stupid.
Well, if you look at what the Scientology, the subject technology can do, which very, very few people outside of the initiates that have done the courses and things like that, it might as well be magic.
Yeah.
It's that far advanced. He was 50 years ahead of everybody else. Engrams, we all know what engrams are, PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Restimulation, well, that's triggering.
Right.
These are concepts that have been taken by others who've been familiar with this information, and they've just made it their own and given it a different label. But this technology, it's out there.
Right. And even like TIR is respected and praised, and people don't even know what the fuck it is.
Right, right. And it's used in almost every VA hospital in the nation.
Yeah, it's nuts.
You're using Dianetics, folks. If you're getting TIR, you're getting TIR counseling, you're using Dianetics. Now, you know, before you run to the bathroom and throw up, it works, right?
Yeah, it does. And that was while I tested that out. You know, I was on Omegle talking to a counselor the other day, like an LCSW, and I mentioned TIR, and she had nothing but positive things to say about it. And I didn't tell her, but
right,
I
didn't have the heart to tell her, right?
But I thought that was fun. Mm-hmm. Like, this is everywhere. It actually is highly influential, and people don't know it.
Mm-hmm. Just hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, and whenever you hear that LSD stays in your spinal cord, guess who that's from?
L. Ron Hubbard. Yep.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And even the, gosh, what's another idea that has come back up? Okay, like we can talk about how everyone at the time was like, heck yeah, malarial therapy is fine and insulin shock therapy is fine and lobotomy is awesome idea. Let's give you a Nobel Prize. No, we look back on that, all of us collectively, in horror.
Right, today. It's barbarism.
Yeah, but at the time, people thought it was like awesome and a great breakthrough because, oh good, that makes people who were like difficult before, now they're incapacitated, and that makes it easier. Mm-hmm. Like now we see that as unbelievably cruel, and L. Ron Hubbard did
right,
at the
right,
time
70
too.
Years later.
Yeah. Yeah. And he thought so, rightfully so.
Right.
And it's just every single time, I mean, he didn't get everything right. That is my belief. Scientology is not perfect and is not right
no.
about everything.
It's a great start, but it doesn't have everything.
No. And I think sometimes on the occasion, it misses the mark too, but not enough to throw it out or even devalue it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's not a whole lot out there that you can find that is positive when you Google it. And that is horribly upsetting. Because the first thing you get is like the church, and everyone's going to skip that, of course. And
right.
Everything else you get is just, we've said tabloid too many times, but it is that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stuff you get next to the candy bars at the grocery store.
Right. And I think that the differentiation should be made that the black eye that Scientology has gotten in the last 40 years since Miscavige has been at the helm is because Miscavige has been at the helm. It's through mismanagement, through mischaracterization, misapplication of policy, criminal behavior, suppression mm-hmm. of parishioners, suppression of dissenters, on and on and on. This isn't, you know, Hubbard had a few ideas that I don't agree with that at the time might have seemed like a good idea, but you know, now
he was not free of bias. He was right. A man, as much as the church wants him to be the Messiah.
Right.
He's not.
He's not perfect. But you know, the thing is that almost all of the negative connotations that are associated with the subject of Scientology and the Church of Scientology come through mismanagement after Hubbard was off the line.
Yes, yes.
And that's something people need to understand, is it's you got the wrong guy, folks.
Right, and if you don't believe us, totally fine. You can go look up the Vice article where
totally.
It tells you the exact
it's
same
It's a great
thing.
Article.
Yeah, it is. Where I probably misquote it, but it said something to the effect of Miscavige is almost entirely responsible for the reputation that Scientology has as a global scam.
And that's the sad, sad truth of the whole thing, is were it not for him, had cooler heads prevailed and people have said, no, Dave.
Right.
You got the go.
Yeah.
If that's possible and there isn't somebody above him, which you know, we know now that we're pretty sure that there is with CST.
Right.
CST has been is the organization of non-Scientologists
that run it.
That run it. They're the board. Mm. He calls himself the chairman of the board, but folks don't believe that for a minute.
Right. It's very suspicious that all of this has come out about it, but the FBI won't do anything. Okay, so they raided Waco and the FLDS, but they won't deal with the Church of Scientology.
Right.
How does that add up?
Yeah, so something smells fishy there.
Yeah, it does. And back to your point about YouTube earlier, you're right, something's fishy there as well, because mm-hmm. sometimes, believe it or not, I get advertisements. Before, like, an anti-Church of Scientology video for the Church of Scientology. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. And I just really wanted to clear the air in the podcast tonight to make these differentiations and point out some of these individuals who decided to monetize a train wreck, mm-hmm. who went in and took pictures of bodies hanging out of windows and decapitations and blood and gore and everything else, and maybe even added a fair amount of CG to it and everything, and then went and sold it to, you know, the major media outlets. I mean, that's basically what some of these people do that right. turn it into this horrible, horrible subject.
It's like Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it's super ironic. I know a lot of the people who are engaging in that sort of thing can't really think beyond two steps about their participation in slandering Scientology as a subject because, again, it's either just a hobby or they've got beef or whatever, but it is affecting the ability for independent Scientology to modernize and
it's holding us back.
Yeah, and to bring in
it's holding people back.
Yeah, and to go through the growing pains that are necessary in order to catch up and exist peacefully and help people who need it.
Right. It's like stunning the growth of an infant by not giving them vitamins and refusing them milk and they're having to subsist on moths and butterflies.
Yeah. It just sucks, dude. Man.
So that's the whole thing that we're trying to do here is to point out that, you know, the subject of Scientology and the Church of Scientology are two different things. And in order for anything to work right, you have to have the correct information and the correct technology about it. And that exists outside of the Church of Scientology. We have all the information. We deliver it on a daily basis, and it's delivered correctly. If you do it right, it really works, and it can change your life.
Right. And again, you don't have to believe anything that is not true for you, but the historical preservation and the non-alteration of this stuff is important for that reason, because otherwise, like we were saying in the first part podcast, you just get into polemics and you just get into false documenting.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing, is that as time has gone on in the church, the copyrights have lapsed. And he's had to change, Miscavige has had to change and have his minions change LRH's Hubbard's mm-hmm. Original writings so that they could quote unquote fraudulently re-copyright these right. things. But as they've changed it, it's become, like you said earlier, it's become a repetitive game of telephone where you have to keep diluting the color down to something else, and something that was yeah. red is now pink.
Yeah, and he wrote in his cadence very specifically, and mm-hmm. you change words to synonyms and restructure sentences, yeah, it is going to be almost unreadable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the modern Scientology books, most of them, they're not terribly pleasant reads because of that reason. And if you look at the fine print...
I'd rather eat broken glass.
Yeah, me too, man. But if you look at the fine print, it says based on the works of L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah, and they... What they've done with that is it's based on, it is not him. They've even copyrighted the L. Ron Hubbard. And if you look at the yeah. books, the books will say either based on the works of L. Ron Hubbard, or they'll say L. Ron Hubbard. They won't say by.
No.
Because they're not by L. Ron Hubbard anymore.
No.
They're by some other guy that's been hired out as a hired gun in order to keep it under copyright so that they can continue to sell something that is no longer milk, it's lemonade.
Yeah, or they're by L. Ron Hubbard, Inc., you know, which is just, that's so messed up. Like, that's somebody's name.
Yeah,
freaking right. Copyright.
You have a little respect, for God's sakes.
Yeah, I know.
I know. That's why we are independent Scientologists. We've seen the real deal. We know what it says. We know how he writes. We apply it. It works. We're happy.
Right. And people have to be afforded personal freedom and granted beingness in order to flourish in Scientology. But in the authoritarian way that the church delivers it, and even aside from it being totally changed and altered and diluted, which is bad in and of itself for so many reasons, that you cannot grow in that environment. You really can't.
No.
It's like having, trying to go through growth spurts in your baby clothes. It just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and nobody flourishes and prospers under suppression and changing and altering the information, creating
that is suppression.
That's really suppression. You can't put another name on it worse. It's just, that's it. It's suppressing the subject. It's suppressing you. When you can't get the news to protect yourself about a tornado coming, let's say here in the Midwest, because wait for it, Apple News wants you to pay for a subscription in order to find out that a tornado is coming. Now, of course, I'm really embellishing this, but when you have to pay to play for everything, if you're going to pay for it, you might as well get the accurate information. And we're not even getting that about the subject of Scientology anymore. No. It's just so altered through monetization and through false authority.
And through very questionable alliances, too.
Very questionable alliances, which that's another podcast coming in the future.
It should be. I mean, we already talked a bit about Nation of Islam, but
there are others.
There are others.
Darker others.
I'm sure there are, and whatever dog whistle you're hearing there, it's not there. That's not what we mean.
That's not what we meant.
But
don't go there.
No, but there is more at play here.
Yeah, and there's a dark side of the force behind all of this stuff.
Right, that's Black Scientology.
Right, Black Dianetics,
which Hubbard warned about too.
1952.
Yeah, that eventually, if you're not careful, people will notice that this is pretty strong and can use it for evil. Just like Mengele, the Nazi quote-unquote doctor, used medicine to harm people. Medicine saves people, but it can also irreparably damage them, depending on how you use it.
Very much so. And that's that. And what we're trying to do here also is to let people know that there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. And if you're looking for truth, you're not going to find it in the news media.
No. Especially not about Scientology.
And there
are good journalists out there who have good intentions and all that. But
sure,
not every source they talk to is reliable. And it's hard to fact check every single person you're talking to, especially when you have a deadline. Have you ever tried to get anyone who's been in the school newspaper? Have you ever tried to meet your deadline and fact check and talk to a wide variety of sources at the same time?
There's not enough time in the day. Yeah.
It's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm. Right. So reliable sources is something Hubbard talks about in his a series called the Data Series, that a reliable source, if you don't have a reliable source, you don't have anything.
No. And people don't even want to go to the library anymore to do research like it used to be. It's like, now I talked to three guys outside of Target who said they one time knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, you know.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing is finding reliable sources on a subject such as Scientology. It's very, very difficult. We have college kids hit us up all the time who are doing school, papers.
Mm.
On the subject, and they're very interested in the subject, but they're having a hard time figuring out, well, who do I talk to? Who is a reliable source? Well, the same thing holds true for people reading things in the news media.
Mm. And I knew somebody who was trying to do a school paper on Scientology, and they walked into the church and they were like, hey, here's what I'm doing. Can you answer some questions? They said, are you thinking about signing up? And they said, no. And so they told them to hit the road. Mm-hmm. Yeah, where are people supposed to get information? That's the other thing. That I know that this is sort of like against some of the policies, but one of the benefits that the independent scene has over the church is that by policy, they will not talk to any journalist. They will not be a part of any documentary, mm-hmm. etc. But the people who have done their homework, who still want to interview some Scientologists, know that independent Scientologists are a thing, and that's where the gap is filled. And that has given a ton of exposure the few times that has happened.
Yeah, it has, and it's really the only breath of fresh air we have.
Yeah, and that is a positive thing for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm. It just needs to happen more often.
If you're out there, you know.
Give us a call. My number is...
Oh, gosh.
So anyway, to wrap this up, we're about an hour and 20 here in about 15 seconds. The long and the short of it is do your own due diligence and...
But check the sources of your sources of your sources of your sources, etc. Validate them with other people. Don't just let it latch onto a feeling and then that's enough for you no matter what it says, even if it's the opposite of the thing the other people are saying and you're going, I got them. No, it's just as easy to get tricked that way too. It's hard. It's really difficult to go and see things for yourself, but as close as you can get to putting yourself in first person to actually do original research and understand what's going on and gathering as many facts as possible, do it. Do the hard work because mm-hmm. that's the only way you can ever know the real truth about something.
That's right. Do your due diligence, do your homework, talk to people, and remember, just because it's on the internet doesn't make it true.
Right.
And look, don't listen.
Mm.
That's one of Hubbard's best datums is look, don't listen, always.
Mm. And recognize things within yourself too. And this isn't the podcast for that.
Right. But trust your own knowingness. Go with your gut instinct. You know, that's key. And, right. when you violate your own knowingness is when you're in trouble every time.
I'm saying practice what you preach because applying the data is the hardest thing, especially to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And since we're not in third person mode, we can't always see it.
That's right.
So don't throw stones if you live in glass house.
Mm-hmm. You're here. So we're going to wrap this up here for this podcast. We want to thank you for listening. If you want any more information on independent Scientology, you can go to ao-gp.org and you can find our online course room there, find out about us. You can chat with us in real time in the little box in the bottom right. You can check out our podcast. We have all kinds of multimedia files in there, books, tons of lectures, whatever you want to do. It's there. Get in touch with us. Give us a jingle. So, Eddie, how about we head out?
All right, sounds good. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much.
Take care, everybody. We'll see you soon.